Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, super important episode. Stop what you're doing and listen to every word of this. You are going to love it. Thank you for supporting us. Thank you for emailing us. And also get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. Can't forget that. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. This episode is brought to you by my friends at ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Secure your device, anonymize your online activity, protect your action online. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Help our show out by also helping yourself protect yourself. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Thank you, everybody.
It's awesome to have you here. So you were at Clemson last night.
That's right. Clemson last night. And I apologize, I'm casual, everybody.
This is a second chance.
Yeah, that's so good. We're good. All right. Thank you. I appreciate that. We're all forgiven. And I was at Clemson last night. We're going to University of Alabama tomorrow. And we're on tour all across the country. And then we'll be up very late tonight, kind of seeing what happens at the Virginia governor's race. So if you guys want to tune into our live stream tonight, we'll be watching that. And it should be a lot of fun, but honored to be here. It's become kind of a passion of mine and Rob's, who's here tonight, my pastor.
Can we recognize him for just a second? Pastor Rob McCoy, would you stand for a second? That was quick. He was like, honored to have him. He should be up here instead of me, but
he should be up there here instead of me. And so no, he's my pastor and he's really kind of, guided me and Turning Point, in trying to get more involved, in trying to get the Christian community engaged in these issues and trying to contest for liberty, which is God's idea, not man's idea.
Absolutely.
And, it's really going to be incumbent on the American church to do something about that. And so I'm just honored to be here tonight and discuss that.
Yeah. For the longest time, Charlie, I was under the opinion that, and you kind of shared this earlier, that church and politics should kind of be separate. What was it that kind of switched that for you? And you said, no, I think it's supposed to be the same.
I grew up with the same belief and I went to a great Bible believing church in the suburbs of Chicago. I gave my life to the Lord in fifth grade and I'd always have a passion for the country and for the nation and the well-being of our fellow countrymen. But I always felt that there was a tension as if there was something contradictory between the two. And it wasn't until I met Rob at an event in California where he said, Charlie, I want you to reconsider this. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, you're in the business of trying to set the captives free. You are trying to talk about liberty. And as I said earlier, liberty is not man's idea. It's God's idea. And Rob challenged me and he said, hey, Charlie, what do you make about Esther? What do you make of Esther, Mordecai, Daniel, Nehemiah, Jeremiah, or Joseph? Any of the figures that we deem in a positive light in the scriptures of people that were pursuing righteousness in secular government for God's purpose. In Jeremiah 29:7, one of my favorite scriptures, and it's also right before Jeremiah 29:11, which is one of the most commonly quoted scriptures in the church. But people don't always talk about Jeremiah 29:7, which is the Lord speaking, which the Lord says, demand the welfare of the nation I have put you in, because your welfare is tied to your nation's welfare. That's a commandment. For us to care about our nation, to care about our country, to care about our city. Daniel fasted and prayed for the well-being of the nation that he was in. There are multiple instances of God's chosen people dwelling and praying and fasting over what was happening in the community and the nation around them. And there are many different kind of churches and movements that have said, as I grew up in, said, you know, I don't want to deal with this. And I want to be very clear that it is the easy road not to engage in these issues. Right. But I believe that now more than ever, the body of Christ and congregations like this have questions about this for good reason. Like, hey, pastor, you know, can you help clarify to me transgender bathrooms? Did God create man and did God create woman? You know, if the pastor says, you know, we don't do that around here, then I believe that's a disservice. Yes. to the flock. And the Bible says many different things about the proper way to set up governments, the proper way that human beings should live. And there are a couple issues that are non-controversial in this regard. One in particular really kind of showed itself in the last year and a half, which is that the church needs to take a stand and say, we will never be labeled non-essential again. Absolutely. We will never allow the church to be shut down while drug dispensaries, alcohol shops, abortion factories, and strip clubs remain open, and the body of Christ and the bride of Christ gets locked down by government order. We're not going to put up with that. It says, do not forsake the gathering of believers. You know, watching church on a live stream is like watching a fireplace on a television screen. You can see it, but there's no warmth.
Right.
And we can never...
Somebody write that down. That was good. I want to use that.
That was awesome.
Wait till I tell you who I took it from. That's a Rob line. So, no, but we trade stuff all the time. But I do want to make this point, though, which is that it says in Romans to love what is good and hate what is evil, that we are commanded to really, and we have to be careful the way we do this, but as the body of Christ, say to our congregation and the community, say, you know what, we're not okay with eight-year-olds being exposed to pornographic sexual education in our local schools. Now, some churches say that's not our role. We're not going to take, you know, stances on that. I think that is a disservice. We know the way that God made man and God made woman for each other. And that if we're going to take no stances in the public sphere, I believe then all of a sudden we're the ones that all of a sudden say, hey, we have the truth, but in order to get the truth, you got to come within the confines of our church only between these hours. We are called to be salt and light in every single corner of our nation and our community. I am arguing for comprehensive Christianity, not compartmentalized Christianity. And at this time, whether we like it or not, so some people say, well, Charlie, what about separation of church and state, right? Now, let's just go through that. Nowhere in the Constitution does it say that term, separation of church and state. It's in a single letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote to the Danbury Baptist Convention, and it's taken wildly out of context. It was then used by an activist Supreme Court justice in the 1960s as a awful interpretation of taking prayer out of schools. And I think we can all agree, as soon as we took prayer out of schools, all of a sudden our nation started to stumble quite significantly. But let's pretend it was right. Let's pretend that there is a separation of church and state. Well, then why don't we keep the state out of the church? Then why don't we say that the state never is allowed to shut down the church? What they've always been saying is it's a one-way separation, saying the church can't impact the state, but the state can come in and all of a sudden, according to certain leaders of a certain political party in our country, say, you know what? We are now, and they're pushing this in legislation, which it won't happen hopefully anytime soon. We are going to say that if you're a pastor, you must conduct homosexual marriages. That we're going to tell you that you have to administer things that are against your deeply held religious beliefs. Let me give you another example. Telling Christian universities that they must vaccinate their students or lose certain privileges, or that we are going to send police officers on campus. I thought it's separation of church and state. In reality, that has been broken a long time ago. And what we need to realize is that this church and this country was founded by the church being active. 55 of 56 of the signers of the Declaration of Independence were Bible-believing, regular church-attending Christians. Every time the church gets complacent, you see the country fall apart. When the church gets active, you see a renewal and a revival, and not a political one. That's far less important as the most important thing, which is winning souls for Jesus Christ and spreading the gospel to a broken world that needs it. And so some people are still, you know, kind of skeptical. I was just at a church in Denver and we had 3,000 people show up. They said, Charlie, I'm not bought and sold, because what you're saying is that the most important thing is politics. I say, I've never said that. The most important thing, number one, is to win souls for Jesus Christ and to spread the good news that is the gospel. Now, there's a second part to the sentence. The second most important thing at a lower importance is what I'm focused on, which is to make sure you could do the first thing. My job is to make sure you can keep on doing the first thing. My job is to make sure that you can continue to share your values, to make sure that the church doesn't get locked down again, to make sure that, as they've done in China, they just banned the Bible app. Now, people say, oh, Charlie, that will never happen here. Do I need to go through the last 18 months as just kind of as a quick history month of things that will never happen here? Locking down our nation, mask mandates, vaccine mandates, double standards, hypocrisy, I think we've all seen things that we never thought would happen in our country happen in the last 18 months. And we must understand this idea of liberty. What is the source? The source is the church and the gospel of Jesus Christ, and it's incumbent on us. In fact, we are commanded to contest for this in every single arena possible.
But Charlie, the pushback that I'm sure you've never heard, so this will be completely brand new for you, is Charlie, Romans 13 yes. says that we're supposed to be submissive to government authorities, so when the government tells us to shut down, we've got to submit to the government. I mean, I know that this is brand new. You've never heard that
before. Never heard that before, yep. actually.
So just initial thoughts on that.
So I'm going to give you all a quick answer to that I think will really kind of open some eyes, because a lot of Christians are confronted with this. It also says something similar in 1 Peter as well, which is to submit to all, I'm paraphrasing, but in Romans 13, it says to submit to all people in authority because God put them there for your good. And a lot of pastors take that as an unquestioned kind of stand down order. We can't do anything. Now, here's a question is, well, who's actually the governing authority in America? Right. The people. So who submits to who? Is that the governor of South Carolina submits to you? It's completely opposite. Now, when Paul was writing that, when Nero was emperor, the sovereign was Nero. The Roman Republic was over. It was the Roman Empire. It was a bloodline passing down of who was governor from Caesar Augustus to Tiberius to Caligula, who was a terrible emperor, to all the way down. That was the way, that was who made decisions, right? The transfer of power happened after Julius Caesar. Julius Caesar crossed the Rubicon, broke across the Roman triumphant, goes into Roman civil war. Caesar declares himself 1 year Caesar emperor and became emperor for life. And beware the tides of March. They kill him. A tu brute, you know the rest of the story. And then all of a sudden his cousin, Caesar Augustus, became emperor for life. And that was the way Rome was governed for the next 500 years. What happens in America is totally different. We don't pick our leaders based on who your mom or dad is. Our mission statement says we the people. Therefore, if you read Romans 13, exactly what it says, God put people in authority because they are there for your good. He put all of you in authority. The natural rights that you have are put in and enshrined by the Constitution of the United States. Therefore, the people who are in the state capitals, the people in Washington, D.C., they have to be submitting to you. They have to understand that Romans 13 is written for the people in government, and you are the sovereign, and your rights come first. And guess what? Your rights come from God, not government. So I would challenge and I would lovingly push back against some pastors that read that, because from American constitutional civic context, the people are the sovereign. The people in the Anthony Fauci or some governor of some state, they are there because we have given them the permission to be there. And it's about time they start honoring that. Right.
Hey, everybody, if you're looking to skip the trip to the post office and dodge all that hectic and nonsensical Christmas-related traffic, go and save money and time with Stamps.com. Stamps.com lets you compare rates, print labels, and access exclusive discounts on UPS, USPS services all year long. It just makes sense, especially if your business sends more mail and packages during the holidays. Whether you're selling online or running an office or side hustle, Stamps.com can save you so much time. Going to the post office instead of stamps.com is kind of like taking the stairs instead of the elevator. Just go up a couple floors, sure, take the stairs, but walking 30 flights a day, come on, you could use a break. So save time and money this holiday season with stamps.com. Sign up with the promo code Kirk for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, free postage, and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and enter promo code Kirk. That's stamps.com, promo code Kirk. You'll save so much time and money, you'll wonder why you did not start sooner. Again, get discounts you can't find anywhere else, like 40% off USPS and 76% off UPS. Access all post office and UPS shipping services you need. Just go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, promo code Kirk. Stamps.com, click on the microphone, promo code Kirk.
I wish he was a little bit more prepared for his answers. Charlie, so when COVID was first announced, when I first heard of COVID, I thought it was going to be, you remember SARS or something, like every 2 years, it seems like we have something, swine flu, bird flu. And it didn't seem like it was going to be a big deal, but then all of a sudden they start shutting down the NCAA tournament.
Yes.
And so my question to you is, when COVID first started taking place, what were your thoughts? And then at what point did you say, I think they're playing, I mean, not that it's not serious, but I think they're playing people.
Well, and we have to realize that we were played on both sides. And so I was actually one of the earlier people to take this seriously because our media didn't take it seriously for 2 months. If you remember, there was kind of all this chatter on untrafficked websites, meaning like kind of the place where, information, isn't allowed on Facebook anymore. And you guys know what I'm talking about, websites where it seems as if they're more right than wrong, not the main institutional legacy media, about this kind of bizarre cold pneumonia cough that's coming out of China. And so you could go back and look at our podcast. I was the only person that had an interview with Mike Pence that asked him about COVID in the entire month of January. I only got 3 questions to ask him for our podcast. I was like, hey, by the way, what is this thing? And he's like, oh no, it's perfectly fine. We got it under control. We're working with our Chinese counterparts. And it's like, okay, fine, whatever. And then you remember Azar and Fauci came out like, oh no, we got this under control. Nothing to worry about. And so I was always kind of a little bit suspicious that there was something more to this story. And, I try to look at these things empirically. I don't look at them pathologically, meaning I try not to get too caught up in the emotion or the feeling of things.
Right.
And then I started to research kind of more what we were dealing with, which is other countries were starting to experience big breakouts. We really didn't have developed meaningful testing with this. And I remember exactly where I was in late February, early March. It was so funny. I was actually thinking about this yesterday. I was in South Carolina for part of this. I just released my book, and it was like the worst time to release a book, right? Right before the virus. But I beat it by like a week before people really took it seriously. But I literally went from like New York to DC to Florida to Arizona, back to Florida to California. I was all over the country. I went to Charleston, South Carolina and Denver. And I remember being in Montana and something totally changed in the media. You guys remember that? It was like almost overnight. It was like a directive on high. And all of a sudden it was like, okay, we went from this is no big deal to all of a sudden like we're being invaded. And then all of a sudden something really bizarre happened. And there was kind of this new ticker they had on cable television, like cases, deaths, hospitalizations. Like, well, that was fast. You alerted your graphics department really fast to kind of get that into gear.
Right.
And so I was really suspicious of kind of how that all unfolded and kind of all that happened. And so then something happened that really bothered me was all of a sudden this term of a lockdown occurred.
Right.
And I was against the lockdown from the beginning, but I put up with it because like, okay, we don't know what we're dealing with here. Maybe that might be okay, because if this actually has a 30% mortality rate, then no one wants anything to be open, right? But then around March 10th, and you could kind of trace back to my writings there, March 10th, March 15th of 2020, I said, this lockdown is doing more harm than good. We are causing a mental health crisis with our young people. There's going to be a suicide epidemic, a drug epidemic, an alcohol epidemic. We're persecuting the American church. You're saying the virus won't spread at Home Depot or Walmart, but it's going to be a super spreader at church. Like, it made no sense to me. And then I started to realize what we were actually dealing with. And so, Tucker Carlson is a hero in this story and a couple other people.
Right.
And I was kind of part of this community that looked at the Diamond Princess cruise. You guys might remember this, you might not, but it was the most important piece of data that our leaders decided to ignore. And guess what? Everything we learned from that cruise is just as true today. So you might say, well, Charlie, what was the cruise? It was this really interesting test case where the cruise went 2 weeks off of the coast, I think it was of California in the Pacific, and COVID was spread. And almost, exactly as it spread, half the ship was just naturally immune and didn't get it. Half the ship did, and then a certain percentage required intensive treatment, and just around 1.2% of people over the age of 65 ended up dying, and a much smaller percentage of people, it was like if you were to scale that for the rest of the country, by the way, these were people that were not given the same sort of treatments that we've now become aware of, right? And so I said, wait a second, if this cruise ship, which is a more senior population, if we're dealing with, 0.8 to 1.2 with bad treatment, I said, you scale that. That does not justify the lockdown of the American economy and plunging people into poverty and destroying small businesses. So I came out really aggressively against the lockdown after that. And we took a big risk, and just kind of putting on my empirical scientific hat, I said, if this is true, which is the most perfect lab, it's the most ideal lab experiment you could imagine, right? It's a self-contained ship in the middle of the ocean, right? You can't, and everything we learned from that actually ended up being true. And then, so then I got a call from my friend from South Korea. And he said, Charlie, you Americans are handling this all wrong. I said, why? He said, you have to go look at anti-malarials. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, you've got to go look at hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. He said, these things are having a lot of success. I remember calling the White House, telling them about this. And there was a massive propaganda campaign. I wasn't the only one that was doing it. It spread really quickly. Mass propaganda campaign against these sort of alternative treatments. And so then April and May of 2020 came along. I said, wait a second. America's still locked down. Like, what's really going on here, right? And we saw all of a sudden, you know, we started to realize that we were trying to kill a mouse with a missile and that the cure could be worse than the disease itself. Now, let me be very clear. I'm not saying that it's not something you should worry about. I've never held that position. In fact, early on, I think that our response was too slow. But instead of going quick to mass inoculation, I've always been perplexed at how there's been a mass propaganda campaign preventing you from learning about azithromycin, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, monoclonal antibodies, and aspirin. It has been one of the greatest injustices of my entire lifetime, to be perfectly honest. Now, it might not be for you. It might not be something you want to pursue, but the fact that most people have never been able to be aware of these alternative treatments was something that was awful. And so to answer your question, early on, then around April or May, I became an anti-lockdown crusader. I traveled the country with anti-lockdown measures. I saw the damaging effects it was having on young people, the lowering of education standards, what it was doing to dehumanize people by mandating masks on 5- and 6-year-olds, which I maintain is child abuse to mask a child. I do. It's terrible and it should not happen. And so, yeah, I continue to be an anti-lockdown person because I take this position. The way we handled this was imprudent. The way we should have handled it is, hey, here's what we're dealing with based on the data. If you're over 65, you should take this very seriously. If you have underlying health conditions, you should take this very seriously. But treating every single American demographic as precisely the same would be trying to do the metaphorical kill a mouse with a missile, as I mentioned. And we continued onward with this as if every person was equally at risk of dying and getting severe hospitalizations from this virus. And even worse, I have to say, as we continued, we started to all of a sudden see how the virus was really being used to reshape American life.
Right.
And this is when I started, and regardless of your opinion of this, we can all agree, it was used to change our voting laws. It was used to change our addiction to social media and technology, to massively vaccinate American society, to keep us locked down, to bail out blue states, all these sorts of different things. We're like, okay, it's one thing to say that we want to protect our seniors and our most vulnerable. Right. What does that have to do with all of a sudden have mass mail-in voting in the state of Georgia exactly? And they used it as an opportunity to unfortunately bring in a pre-existing political agenda. And so I think there's a lot of lessons to learn from this, everybody. But I would encourage all of you to go back early. The people that were signaling caution with the lockdowns tend to have been right about a lot throughout this entire thing. I'm not saying that we've been right. We've been wrong plenty. But there tends to be this kind of rhythm where when you turn off your television, you start to look at things around you and look at people that have no vested interest in vaccinating your 4-year-old, they tend to be right about a lot at this current time. So I encourage everyone to kind of break out of the simulation and find other news sources, especially, you know, in American society today.
Download it. You got a podcast or something like that.
I do. Yes.
Something.
We're gonna plug that. I could plug that now.
You can do it. Yeah.
Thank you. We do 2 podcasts today. Anyone listen to the podcast here? God bless you guys. Thank you. Thank you. That's very enthusiastic. Thank you. We'll plug this once or twice throughout the evening. Everyone has a smartphone. You guys can subscribe. It would bless us a lot. We're under constant threat of cancellation by these big companies. In order to subscribe on Apple, you have to hit like a plus in the upper right-hand corner. They made it super complicated. But if you don't know how to subscribe to a podcast, I saw an 11-year-old around here somewhere that would be more than happy to guide you through how to subscribe to a podcast.
I personally subscribe to 4 podcasts, only 4, and you're one of the 4, man, because you guys, I mean, 2 podcasts a day. I can't do 1 a month. It's crazy. So I want to play a game of like word associations. I'll just say a word or two and you just tell me what pops in your mind. This will be so fun.
All right, boy, here we go.
Vaccine mandates.
Unethical. You just could only get 1 word, right?
No. You can
Okay.
You can go.
Unethical, immoral, evil, unconstitutional.
Unconstitutional. Riff on that for a second.
Yeah, it should be. Yeah. I mean, let
no,
me say.
No, I agree.
Yeah, and the courts go their own direction on this. But I encourage y'all, we did a whole podcast on this where there is a Supreme Court decision in early 1900s called Jacobson v. Massachusetts, which really kind of set the precedent for vaccine mandates in our country. And that very same Supreme Court decision, Jacobson v. Massachusetts, was used by Justice Louis Brandeis in the 1920s as an excuse to sterilize 67,000 women that were deemed as idiot women. Just to give you an idea of how that certain that Supreme Court decision has been used in a rather unethical way. I believe very firmly that every American, regardless of kind of where you are, should be given medical and religious exemptions to vaccines. That inherently breaks the whole idea of a vaccine mandate. So some people say, Charlie, this vaccine, why don't you complain about measles, mumps, rubella vaccines, right? That's a common thought that people say. Charlie, we mandate that for our kids at school. Why are you against this vaccine? I'll give you three reasons why. Number one, this vaccine, by all independent metrics, was rushed to the market. It was not given the same sort of trial, the same sort of independent testing. That's not to say there wasn't any, okay? But in relation to most vaccines that are widespread with children, this was at an accelerated pace, the likes of which we've never seen. Number two, if you try to get a religious exemption for measles, mumps, and rubella, you will likely be approved. Religious exemptions get approved all the time for childhood vaccines, especially, I don't know, in South Carolina, but out west, in Idaho and Arizona, they will give out vaccine exemptions all the time. Number three, when it comes to this with kind of the question of measles, mumps, rubella, there's nowhere near the adverse events that are starting to pop up to the MMR vaccines that we are seeing to the current vaccines. I encourage us all of you to do your own research. Again, I'm not anti-vax. If you got vaccinated, that's your own medical decision. You should be able to make your own medical decision. I'm not here to tell you any different. And you shouldn't come attack me for not wanting to get this vaccine. Everyone is different in the capacity of making their own medical decisions. Find a doctor that you believe has the right motives for you and make that decision privately. That's the way we used to do medicine in our country. But the third thing is this, if you look at the adverse events, it should be a timeout. The vaccine adverse event reporting system, which is VAERS, VAERS.gov, has an unusual spike in vaccine adverse events, in myocarditis, in heart-related issues. Everyone can go look at it yourself. Some people say that's underreported. You could go do your own independent research. I know in my own personal circle, though, plenty of people that have had adverse events to this vaccine, people that have had paralyzed from the waist down, people that have had a lot of unfortunate things, heart issues. Even I know one person whose mom dropped dead after getting it. I'm not trying to scare you. I'm not trying to fear monger. That's not what I do. It's just a factual thing. But here's where it comes down to is the force, right? Which is that if you think this is in your best interest, which there is some evidence to show that if you're over the age of 65, this vaccine can be an effective treatment in lowering your chance of dying. That is true. There is some data to show that if you weigh in the possible costs associated with it. But the question is, why all of a sudden, if it's a vaccine that prevents you from getting it, do you want to force other people to get it so you can't get it? You need to have other people vaccinated, protect you from your own vaccinated status. That's kind of weird, isn't it? Like, I need to go vaccinate other people to prevent me from getting something the vaccine's supposed to prevent me, right? But in reality, and this is important, is that the way they're describing it is that it's more like a treatment than it is a vaccine. Now, if that's the case, then all of a sudden we should be allowed to come to the table and say, okay, we've been trying to talk about treatments that you guys have been covering up for quite some time, like vitamin D. A lot of people that die from COVID have vitamin D deficiencies. You guys can solve that by going to CVS or Walgreens rather cheaply, by the way. Azithromycin, Z-Pak, super cheap. We talk about ivermectin, talk about hydroxychloroquine. We just helped a fellow pastor friend of mine, I'm not at liberty to say who yet, we are going to tell the story, someone that had some underlying health conditions. He said, Charlie, what do I do? I said, I'm going to get you to a monoclonal antibody treatment center. He had no idea that they even existed because every person in his friend network said, go to the hospital. And not every hospital has access to monoclonals, but there was a doctor. If you guys don't know what monoclonal antibodies is, that's okay. It's otherwise known as Regeneron, which is white blood cell treatment of people that previously had COVID, and it could help significantly. I could go through ozone therapy or just basic aspirin. Go tonight, go look at the Johns Hopkins story, study done on NIH.gov. It's published. It was totally covered up. Just type in aspirin COVID-19 hospitalizations. Everyone here has been exposed to aspirin in one way or the other. It's a miracle drug. Now, like all things in life, if you take too much aspirin, you could bleed out. Okay, we all know that. But for some people, aspirin has been a miracle drug that has prevented blood clots and allowed you to go back to normal life, right? It's also incredibly cheap, right? I just want to say, aspirin is super cheap to make. I mean, cents on the dollar to make a pill of aspirin versus a vial of a vaccine. Study that shows that taking a dose of aspirin once you get the virus could lower your chance of being hospitalized between 40 to 60%. That's pretty significant. That's worth talking about. And I kid you not, look up then after that the date of the FDA and CDC coming out saying that aspirin might, we need to rethink America's addiction to aspirin, that 30 million Americans, mostly seniors, use as a way to prevent blood clots. Like, that's an awfully suspicious time to come out with a war on aspirin. So what I'm just trying to do with this conversation, I'm not here to tell you what to do with your medical decisions. I never have. But I feel it's important because not everyone is actually in the weeds as much as I have on this stuff. And traveling the country, meeting lots of different people, seeing these things, I feel it's a moral imperative just to share with you what I'm seeing. And you guys can make the best decisions you see fit. And I have personally been able to help dozens of people that otherwise would have gone straight to a hospital be able to successfully navigate COVID with people with COPD, people in their late 80s, people that have, you know, underlying health conditions, people that are 500 to 600 pounds. And I'm not saying that I have all the answers by any means, but I am saying dwelling over this for hours a day, I think that, you know, sharing this with you guys so you have the information to be able to deal with this, information is important and the truth will set you free.
You want to do a few more, and then you want to do some Q&A at the end?
Sure. Okay. Yeah, that's great.
Okay, we'll set up for that in just a second. I just got a couple more word associations.
I forgot. That was a one-word
word
association.
Listen, it's the easiest thing I've ever done. I just say a couple words, and you go, and I just nod.
I just want to say that I forgot to say this earlier. Just you openly saying that, you know, you didn't take these issues or you didn't do the politics thing previously and doing it now. That's a courageous thing. And you deserve a lot of credit for that. Truly. I wish more pastors had that. Okay. I really want to say that.
Well, you and Pastor Rob had a big part in that. Neither one of you would shut up about it for 2 years. So either I had to unsubscribe or just...
There you go.
Yeah, there we go.
We're left with two choices.
I know. I can't unsubscribe. So here's an easy one. This one's easy. It'll be Anthony Fauci.
Criminal. duplicitous, treacherous, double-minded. Look, I don't say this lightly. What he has done to damage the American society is more than any person that's never been elected to public office that has done damage to our country than I can think of in our lifetime. No one ever voted this guy in. He has had a huge, a massive damaging effect on the American way of life, specifically children in childhood development and schools and education. Unnecessary, baseless fear-mongering. Now he's pushing. This is what's so amazing is that he says, well, and he says in his raspy voice, we need to vaccinate children to prevent them because they have a low risk of dying from COVID, to have a low risk of dying from COVID. It's like, wait a second. I thought they have a low risk. So you want to introduce now 50 million vaccine vials to make someone have it doesn't make any sense at all. And you actually look at the numbers of children risk of dying from COVID. It's incredibly low, everybody. I mean, just so you know that if a child rode in a car here to this church, they are 20 times more likely to die in the car ride to this event than from COVID, just to know what you're dealing with, right? And then Fauci lied under oath on May 11th of this last year of where this virus came from and the gain of function research associated with it. And look, he also is kind of a creature of the administrative state, right? Which is this unelected, unknown, kind of unaccountable power source in our country that is completely extra constitutional. In some sense, we did not vote for that, right? We did not go to the polls and say, we want to give all this power to some public health bureaucrat. And it's everything the founding fathers tried to warn against, which is for those kind of significant decisions, keep them local or at state levels, not going into the federal government in some sort of sense where he controls tens of billions of dollars of public health money to distribute as he sees fit. And so happy to do more word association with that. And I will say this. I hope Anthony Fauci finds the Lord. I really do. Because I think I think it would dramatically make him reconsider him trying to play God. It's the best fit, I should say, of the archetype of someone trying to play God here on this earth. He's as close as I've seen in my lifetime of someone that rejects the two things we all believe, that there is a God and we are not him. I don't think he acknowledges those things. I don't. Everything he's trying to do is micromanagement, is mad scientist play, is manipulation. And so this is what's so important about finding out where this virus actually came from and his involvement in it, is that the virus was not an act of God. It was someone trying to play God that created the virus. Think about that. Is that it didn't, and we know it came from the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Anyone who tells you different is just fooling you. And therefore, it wasn't that it just came from some bat from the Himalayan mountains. No, this was someone that was engaging in the same sort of treacherous, unbiblical behavior of Genesis 11, of someone that was trying to build a superstructure to challenge God himself, the Tower of Babel. And God was so offended by this, he scattered the nations and the people of that tower into total confusion of the languages across the earth. That sort of principle of, you're going to try to challenge my authority? Right. I'm going to sow confusion and chaos as a result of that. And do not challenge God. It does not work well for you. But Fauci does not even recognize that. He doesn't even recognize the sovereignty of God. In fact, he tries to play God himself. And Dwight D. Eisenhower, who I believe is one of the greatest American presidents that gets almost no credit for it, in his farewell address, many people know that in his farewell address, he mentioned that we should be wary of a military-industrial complex. But what most people don't know is that the full statement is he said, we must be wary of an unelected, unaccountable scientific and technological elite that will run our country into the ground given the proper checks and balances that our founding fathers gave us. That's a pretty amazing statement from a man who won a world war in two theaters against existential evil and served 8 years as a president, and someone who loved the Lord, by the way, and grew up in very humble beginnings. And I think we need to heed that warning from Dwight D. Eisenhower, what happens when we allow people in the scientific and technological elite to run our lives.
I want to tell you guys about Good Ranchers, okay? You've heard me talk about it a lot. Look, Good Ranchers, they achieve the trifecta. The trifecta is very simple. One, everyone has to eat. Two, you love the country. Three, you want to support the Charlie Kirk Show. So Good Ranchers, they send you boxes of meat. When we get a box of meat from Good Ranchers, it's bedlam. People fight over the meat. It is the closest thing to Christmas morning I've ever seen with adults. And Good Ranchers has a limited time offer for all of our listeners. 10 free bistro fillets when you enter promo code Charlie at checkout. If you go to goodranchers.com/Charlie right now, this is a $100 value free with promo code Charlie. I want you to imagine over 100,000 Americans losing their jobs. So you could stop imagining because it's a reality. Since 2015, over 100,000 independent farms and ranches in the United States have shut down. Why? Because foreign meat is stealing their business and robbing you the quality and flavor you deserve. That's why Good Ranchers is here. They exist to support local American farms to help you make great American meals. Together, they want to restore the American ranch and your meals to their former glory. Get the beef, chicken, and seafood that can't be imported or matched at GoodRanchers.com. Did you know the product made in the USA has been stolen by foreign countries or product of the USA? They process their meat here, and then they fraudulently label it as if it came here from America. Good Ranchers is here to put America first at the dinner table and the farmers that work to raise the meat we eat. So do me a favor. Get a box of Good Ranchers. It supports the country. It supports the show. And everyone listening to this has to eat. Go to GoodRanchers.com/Charlie right now and get 10 free bistro fillets. And in addition, when you subscribe, you'll save a $25 off each subscription box of mouth-watering American meats for life. These boxes will show up on schedule right to your door. That's right. Get 10 free bistro fillets, $100 value, free express shipping, and a $25 of your monthly subscription for life. GoodRanchers.com/Charlie. Go to GoodRanchers.com/Charlie or use code Charlie at checkout. That's 10 free bistro fillets, free express shipping, $25 of your monthly subscription for life at GoodRanchers.com/Charlie.
tonight, when this event is over, you're going to be doing election coverage for now. If you would have told me or anybody in this room, you know, a month ago that you like, there's going to be an election in Virginia that's literally going to captivate a lot of like, it's going to matter to a lot of people, I would have thought you were crazy. But tonight, that, why does that election matter so much?
Well, you and me both. I mean, I, you know, we wanted to find a place to speak on this night because we kind of had a free night between speaking at Clemson and Alabama, because we had a team meeting and we said, hey, are we going to be doing election live coverage? I said, ah, the Virginia race, he'll lose by like 8 points. Like, we might do a little thing where it's now like, as soon as we're done, I'm heading into the office. We're going straight into the live stream, you know, to millions of viewers tonight. But you guys matter more than that. So we're postponing that just so you guys all know, because I always want to make good on my commitments to have these events. Nothing bothers me more is when people, you know, I'm going to be there and they don't. It just drives me nuts. So that can wait. And that's going to go probably till 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. knowing kind of all the nonsense out of Fairfax County. But it's really an important question, which is, I think, one of the reasons why the church is starting to rise up. So in Proverbs 11:11, it's one of the verses that I think speaks very clearly to kind of why we need to care about our government and our leaders around us. And I'm paraphrasing, but it's this contrast proverb, of which a lot of proverbs are, which is that when the upright rule, you know, the righteousness prevail, but when the wicked rule, you know, people either scowl or complain. I can't remember the exact word that is used. Right. But also another proverb is, you know, set straight a child in its ways, right? And again, I'm paraphrasing the essence of the proverb, but education is something that we as Christians are commanded to get involved in. Well, the reason why this race in Virginia has all of a sudden went from a comfortable blue state to now a legitimate battleground state is because all of a sudden from a 10-point margin plus what happened in Loudoun County, Virginia, and what happened in the schools and school boards across the country has changed the American political dynamic in a profound way. And here's what happened. In Virginia, Democrats would win by 8 points, 10 points statewide. We don't know what's going to happen tonight, but it's looking very good for the Republican challenger. Where all of a sudden in Loudoun County, Virginia, you started to see rumblings of moms and dads starting to show up to school board meetings and care about their children's education. Now, education comes from a Latin word, which means to lead forth to truth, right? So we are commanded to lead our children forth into truth and goodness and, God willing, a relationship with our Creator in Jesus Christ. But when you start to all of a sudden send your children to school, and they get exposed to critical race theory or diversity, equity, inclusion or pornographic, and I do not use that word lightly. If you look at this curriculum, it will take your breath away. Pornographic sexual education for 8-year-olds, Christians should rise up and say, wait a second, I have a big problem with this. So in Loudoun County, Virginia, this is when it started to hit kind of a climax. A father went to the Loudoun County, Virginia school board meeting in late May and was screaming. And he was, some people say, oh, he was out of line. But he had a message to deliver. And I want every father here to tell me that you would handle this differently when I tell you this entire story. He was arrested by the police for disorderly conduct at the school board meeting. Now, apparently, it was so disorderly that the National School Board Association of America labeled him a domestic terrorist. And then the Attorney General of our country then said, oh, okay, we're going to use the FBI and the Patriot Act to go after dads like him. Right. But why was he screaming at this meeting? Well, he finally got to tell his story here in October. And I think he conveniently waited to tell his story for political purposes. I honestly did. I think that someone said, hey, wait a couple months because you're about to drop a bombshell on the entire regime. Well, that father has a 9th grade daughter who was in a bathroom, and that 9th grade daughter was raped by a transgender student of a young man who thinks he was a woman who was accommodated to be able to use that bathroom. They were debating transgender bathrooms that night at the school board meeting. And he wanted to tell his story about how his daughter was raped at the school, at the high school, and they weren't telling the story. Superintendent has the father arrested. Then he goes under oath at the school board meeting, the Dr. Ziegler, head of the school board, and says, we have no instances of rapes or any sexual assault. Lying under oath, even though he sent a private email admitting to that. Oh, the story gets worse. So then the school board met privately, and they transferred the rapist from one school to another school where he raped another girl. And now you add on to that the thousands of people that were already showing up to the Loudoun County School Board meetings, complaining about curriculum, complaining about the sex ed, complaining about mask mandates. And all of a sudden you had an inter-institutional collusion where they were more worried, everybody, about some political, correct, abstract, transgender agenda than the well-being of your daughters. So I'm going to ask that question again. For the fathers out there, if that would have happened to your daughter, do you think you would have been a little disorderly at that meeting if they're trying to all of a sudden protect transgender bathrooms? I'm surprised he restrained himself as well as he did, and no one would tell his story. And so all of a sudden this father went from the disorderly dad to all of a sudden the martyr whose daughter was raped and the school board covered it up. Well, all this happened in the midst of a Virginia governor's race. Virginia's wacky. They do their elections in odd years, you know, 17, 21, 25. And it's also kind of a weird year because every governor's only allowed to serve one non-consecutive term. One term, you can't run for re-election, right? It's the way it works in Virginia. Terry McAuliffe, the Clinton operative, was up 10 points in the polls, raising money from everyone. Obama, Harris, Biden. It didn't even look like a race. Then all of a sudden, Youngkin decided to ignore his Republican consultants and go on a campaign representing these parents that were talking about real issues. And you know what's amazing? Is that these were parents that voted for Biden. These are parents that were Democrats. These are parents that hated Donald Trump and said on the news, I hate Donald Trump, but I don't care. This is so much more important than politics. And like a storm, I'm telling you, and this is happening in real time, the results are coming. All of a sudden, Virginia went from a comfortable blue state where the recent polls had him up 8 points, up 3 points. And here's how the political winds have changed everybody. All of a sudden, all of this kind of abstract kind of march for justice, social justice stuff, it's all fun and games till they come for your children. It's all fun and games till all of a sudden your seven-year-old has to go sit through some sort of kind of seminar saying that, you know, your six-year-old is a racist because of the color of their skin. You're like, excuse me? Like, I was all for kind of like Black Lives Matter until that started to happen. Or all of a sudden where, I kid you not, hundreds of girls in the Loudoun County school system are holding it every day, not going to the restroom in fear of being raped by the men that also share the restroom. Yeah, that's the real life implications of this stuff. And so for those of us that have kind of been involved in this for a couple of years, in some ways, you know, we've been waiting for this kind of parent rebellion to happen. And it's an unfortunate, sad, and tragic thing that it happened to happen in this way. But here's the importance, everybody, is that you have to always be on your guard against nice-sounding sound bites of tolerance and equity inclusion, because they can have real-life implications. Real-life implications that can harm your children and your communities. And we as Christians need to be wise, right? James 1:5, which is to pray for wisdom and God will give it to you generously, and say, yeah, you know, that sticker and that sound bite sounds good, but is that actually going to do what you say it's going to do? Or is that going to result in all of a sudden girls becoming targets for predators in the Loudoun County schools? Is that going to create a mini generation of racists and have seven-year-olds care more about the color of their skin than actually the character of their fellow classmates? And here's the thing they never expected. They never expected it to have a political cost.
Right.
They thought it would just be moms and dads complaining. No. Loudoun County, if for the Virginia governor's race goes for Youngkin tonight, it'll be because of moms and dads who drew the line and they say, we are not going to take it anymore.
Right.
The reason that story stood out to me so much is I have a 14-year-old daughter in the ninth grade. And if that happens to her, I become like the Apostle Paul and start a prison ministry. Don't think I'll make it to the school board.
So Rob, do you have an announcement?
There you go.
Wow. And we got to manage our expectations. It's going to be trickling in. And I think a lot of fathers share that view, which is, you touch my daughter that way, and it's worse than that. And by the way, his anger wasn't even directed at the rapist. That rapist should go to jail. No, it's the enablers. It's the enablers of the people that put up with that. And that's where all of a sudden it's rage-inducing, because this was
Absolutely.
So preventable, right?
Absolutely.
And then you're going to arrest him for showing up at the meeting, for trying to prevent that from other girls. And guess what? Because they arrested him, another girl got raped. I want you to think about that. If he would have been allowed to testify at that meeting, it probably would have just been like a stoppage, and that wouldn't have happened to another family.
Which blows my mind, because I've always said, if I'm at
If I'm at a restaurant or I'm at a department store and my wife and my daughter are in the bathroom and a dude comes walking up and says, you know, like Shania Twain, I feel like a woman. I'm like, you're not, it's not a hate thing. It's not a personal thing. You're just not going in that bathroom.
Amen.
You're not going.
And we as men have to start to be willing to encounter all the bad names they're going to call us to protect women we care about, to protect young girls from being preyed on by these kind of mentally deranged people that go after them. I don't use that word lightly. I hope they get help. I hope they get counseling. But it is a significant mental disorder to have gender dysphoria. And, you know, some people say, Charlie, that's not loving. No, I think it's very loving to tell the truth. And I'm not going to try to do it in a bombastic way. I'm not going to try to, you know, but I'm also, honestly, kind of over this entire thing that I kind of have to pander to your current feelings when innocent people's lives and livelihoods are at risk. Like, I'm kind of over that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I've got one more question. I know that we're going to do Q&A, but you're on the stage and I get to ask you questions and I may never have this opportunity again. So,
we'll talk. So
I need to know from your, because every morning I get up and I look at like seven or eight different websites. For the past 2 or 3 weeks, CNN.com has featured an article about January the 6th.
A lot of chatter on that.
So why? Because I watched that and I didn't think it was a good thing. I thought it was a horrible thing. But at the end of the day, it looked at the time when I was watching, I'm like, it looks like a bunch of idiots running around taking selfies in the Capitol. And they got it cleared. And now my question to you is, why do people need it to be, quote, the greatest terrorist event that has happened in our country since the War of 1812?
Yeah, and that's the language they're using. And so I denounced it on air as we were doing our broadcast.
I remember.
And so if anyone, you know, people say, Charlie, where were you? I was literally doing my show in Phoenix denouncing it. I have 4 hours of footage to tell you exactly where I was. I don't like the idea of storming the Capitol on the left or the right. I'm not a fan of that. I said that at the time. Do I think that people that did that should be treated any differently than the same sort of citations that other protesters get for that? Of course not. They're getting solitary confinement for going into the Capitol and taking a selfie and being treated like Timothy McVeigh. It's disgusting. And then they were able to insert into the narrative that it was deadly, right? Well, the only deaths that happen were either afterwards of non-related issues, like Officer Brian Sicknick, who did not die from some sort of fire extinguisher to the head. That's a complete and total lie. Or Ashley Babbitt, who was killed by a Capitol police officer who actually shot her for being unarmed in the Capitol. And then they said, oh, it was an armed insurrection. They did not find one person that walked into the Capitol that was actually armed at the time. Not one person. And there is an open question about this, and I say this again with the proper, you know, pretext that I did not support the actual, you know, entrance into the Capitol of the role of agitators actually as this happened. And there is more and more evidence, suspicious evidence, to show that there might have been federal informants and agitators that were cheering on the actual entrance of people going into the Capitol. And I encourage all of you to look at some of the research that's been done on this and kind of all of the kind of the proper context behind it. Now, I'm going to answer your question because I'm not a politician. I actually answer questions, which is why do they need this to continue? Well, it's very simple. It's that they're bringing the war on terror home. Is that they want a new war of domestic surveillance against people that do not share their political beliefs. They want to beat the drums of war against people that supported President Trump, people that are of more of a Christian religious, you know, belief. And that is going to be kind of their new overemphasis and focus. I'm sure none of you heard about all the climate activists that stormed the Department of Interior 3 weeks ago. You guys hear about that? Probably not. Where hundreds of climate activists stormed their way into a federal building, an insurrection. No one even talked about it. No, instead, what happened there and what they're trying to do is they're trying to justify a new Patriot Act 2.0 to spy on all of you, to spy on your text messages and then control you and then micromanage you. But I have to say, it's not working, though. It's
right.
Not.
Right.
Because they thought that kind of our energy and our focus to retake the country peacefully would stop after January 6th. They thought it would be kind of this quelling effect and it would be a chilling effect. Instead, we started showing up at school board meetings across the country in record numbers and making a significant impact. And let me tell you that the Department of Justice's letter saying that we are going to use the means of the federal government to go after moms and dads that show up at school board meetings is evidence to that fact. So make no mistake, the same way they needed the narrative to justify the invasion of Iraq of the weapons of mass destruction is the same sort of reason they need to keep the drumbeat going to say, you know what we need? We need a new division of the Department of Homeland Security against violent right-wing extremism. That's what they're going to say. We need new agents that are hired just for right-wing extremism. And I've said this before. I've denounced violence at our events. I do not support it. I believe that actually being violent plays into their own ambitions to create a broader security state. I believe that, you know, that's not who we are, nor should it be who we are. And I understand that some people say, Charlie, I'm so mad at all of this stuff. Then look, what does the Bible say? That self-control is a fruit of the Spirit. Pray for some. Right? That they are worried that we are going to actually be able to have peaceful ways to retake the country. And that in some ways, I think they're trying to provoke us into something other than that. But to answer your question directly, this narrative is precious to them. It's precious to them because they want to keep it going to try to justify something that they would not be able to usher in otherwise, which is a mass Leviathan that will criminalize half the country. That will criminalize half the country, no different than ISIS or Al-Qaeda or Osama bin Laden. They're using precisely the same type of language. That people that walked into the Capitol building and took a selfie is somehow a moral equivalent to al-Baghdadi or Osama bin Laden. Like, give me a break. Are you serious? Like, that's where we're at. And then just to kind of add it more, just kind of about exactly what happened that day. The actual penetration of the outer fence of the Capitol, which was nothing, it was like a bike rack, it started while the president was still speaking. You have to all know the timeline of this does not add up with their own account, right? Like, oh, the president incited it. No, if you look at the actual chain of events, a mile and a half away, the president was still speaking while the bike racks were being kicked over. And then it's kind of this weird double unfolding of what happened that day, and which is that the bike racks were toppled over and then all of the Trump supporters then stopped and did not enter the Capitol. They were there kind of on that Capitol kind of where they do the inauguration. Right. And there were prayers happening and it was just kind of a de-escalation. And then inexplicably, and we've never gotten an answer on this, all of a sudden the police started launching tear gas on that crowd, almost re-agitating it and reanimating the crowd. And then all of a sudden, from that point forward, then people started to walk into the Capitol. And so I encourage everyone just to take a pause. And if you're not convinced by anything I just said, here's what you will be convinced by, which is that what happened on those, you do not have to support the violence, which you shouldn't, and support what happened that day by also saying it is wrong to use the security apparatus of America to criminalize people that have different political beliefs than you. It would be wrong if we did it with people on the left. It'd be wrong if all of a sudden you said, you know what? We need to use the FBI to go after atheists. No, that's wrong. That's wrong regardless of your political beliefs, and it's especially wrong right now.
The use of your vocabulary is unreal. Like, I'm sitting here going, I could never speak like this, even if I rehearsed. And he's just flowing like a rapper. It's pretty amazing.
Thank you. I've actually never been compared
to a rapper. You are the political equivalent of 50 Cent. So just know that.
Oh,
thank
you.
Yeah. But you've never heard that ever.
That's new. I have to say that's
good. We want to be known for something.
Did you know that if you shop at Nike, they turn around and give your hard-earned dollars to pro-abortion groups like Planned Parenthood and the Population Council? Sinister folks, by the way. Did you know that Airbnb gave $500,000 to the Marxist BLM Incorporated organization? Your first vote is at the ballot box, but that isn't enough to defend our traditional Judeo-Christian values. Left-wing corporations are subverting our nation and our republic by taking money from conservative customers and giving it to radical organizations that support abortion, gun control, and critical race theory. You have another vote, a second vote at the checkout line, which is why there's a massively important organization called Second Vote that comes in. I know them very well. I've known them for years, and I'm so honored to partner with them. And the courageous people at Second Vote are exposing corporations for how they spend your money. So check out secondvote.com today. SecondVote is developing incredible tools and engaging the smartest minds in the country to help inform Americans' purchasing decisions. Their work is arduous, complex, and exhaustive, and it doesn't happen for free. So please support their work so we can defend our future from the woke Marxist mob. So here's what I want you to do. Do what I did. Just go right now to secondvote.com and subscribe. It's $50 a year. I know it costs something, but they have to be able to pay for their research. And the Black family, who are amazing people, by the way, have underwritten this effort for quite some time. But if you use the promo code Charlie, you get 50% off. That's $25 a year, everybody. Okay? That's literally $2 a month. And that's 50% off. So $25 a year. That's $2.5 a month at that, so that you can have the information you need on your next purchase. So join me. Go to secondvote.com and subscribe with promo code Charlie. Maybe it's like, hey, I don't know if the car I'm buying, are they donating to Planned Parenthood? What about all these companies? Secondvote.com has every company ranked. It's a beautiful thing. Go to secondvote.com and subscribe with promo code Charlie today.
So here's what we'll do. Just raise your hand. We'll run a mic to you. That's the easiest way to do it. Okay? So just let's do that. We'll do floating mics. It's easier than the line because this is much easier. Yeah.
My mom was murdered due to COVID protocol back in August and due remdesivir poisoning. So are you sharing that information? I know Dr. Brian Artis is heavily involved, and I've been speaking alongside of him and just sharing that experience. So just go ahead.
Yes, and so I want to make sure everyone knows the difference between Regeneron and remdesivir. I always mispronounce it. I think you pronounced it right. Remdesivir is extremely expensive, awful on the kidneys, and has adverse events like you wouldn't believe. And we are covering it, and we're getting lots of different pieces of feedback where people say, Charlie, they are just generously throwing remdesivir at patients that otherwise, you know, would qualify for other requirements. I want to encourage you, though, please keep telling your story about your mom. That firsthand testimonies of what's happening at this time is incredibly important. So what was your name again? Courtney, I just want to say I'm so sorry for your loss. And these numbers are mounting. You're not alone. A lot of people say, Charlie, I dropped my dad off at the hospital and I asked them to do these five things and they put him on a ventilator and I don't know what happened after that. Now, I am not attacking our frontline workers. I think that there's protocol, which is, I think, the right way to go after it. That's from the top down, that is handcuffing our nurses and our people on the front lines to not do even what they know is best. And so I want to encourage you to keep speaking out, and I'm very sorry for your loss.
Hey, Charlie, I'm a student at Anderson, and one of the things that my professors and peers often rail on America for is income inequality, and I wondered if you could kind of speak to that.
Yes. So what school you go to again?
Anderson. It's Anderson, like 10 minutes away.
Right down the street. Yes. So yeah, this is an important issue and topic, and I don't think that those of us who are conservatives should be afraid to talk about this issue. And so as we kind of tell the world what we believe and why we believe it, we obviously believe markets is the best way to organize society. But when all of a sudden we start to have externalities that we don't agree with or trends that we don't support, we don't have to all of a sudden become cheerleaders for those trends or those externalities. Now, I would argue, though, that some of these trends are a byproduct of not market principles, but cronyism and backwards dealing and inside-out type government favors that go to companies that don't actually create the best products, but actually have access to lobbyists or trial lawyers or things of that nature. And so let's talk about, you know, the income inequality. We as conservatives should come out, we should say that you should be able to support a family on one income. That should be a key pillar plank. Now, not every conservative agrees with me. Some say, Charlie, let the free market work it out. I say that is horse pucky and nonsense. I say that if you have to have both the mom and dad in the workforce, that's not an economy working for families. That's an economy working for corporations. And so this is a balance, right? Which is that we don't want to have the mom and dad on government assistance, right? We don't want to all of a sudden say that we want to expand the government apparatus, but we should say that in the 1980s, you could support a family of four with 36 hours of work. Now it takes 53 hours of work to support I'm sorry, not hours, 53 weeks. Okay, so 36 weeks, 53 weeks, okay? So in the 1980s, 36 weeks of work, you could have just the father work and support a family of four. So that means that he could work another 6 weeks and work overtime and have some savings. Or he can have a couple weeks of vacation with his family, more leisure time. Now it takes 53 weeks of work a year. What does that mean? The family either has to go into debt, or the wife or the other spouse has to go in involuntarily. I'm all for women working if they want to. I want to be very clear. Some people say, Charlie, it's misogynistic. If you want to work as a mom, but you should be given the choice to be with your children the first 10 years of the child's life, which I think is precious. And we as Christians should preserve that and not say, oh no, you only get 6 weeks with your kid, drop it off at daycare with no other choice, and then go back to your job if that's not what you want. And so from the income inequality standpoint, make no mistake that one of the reasons why income inequality is growing, number one, after COVID, it was a huge reason why income inequality grew. The rich that had money to all of a sudden invest in certain products and services are richer than ever before. The lockdowns made the rich richer. The lockdowns were a gift to the richest people on the planet. Amazon had more deliveries than ever before because people were afraid to leave their home. Yet small businesses were totally crushed by the Amazonification of America. I just made that word up, but thank you. Yeah. The Amazonification of America. That's pretty good, right?
It's amazing.
Thank you. And so I got some more tricks up my sleeve, or from more people using Zuckerberg's Facebook or whatever it might be. And so we don't have to defend any sort of growing income inequality at a default position. But the question is, well, what do we want, right? What does success look like? Success looks like we want stronger families, and we want young people to be able to get married earlier and to be able to have more children without all the same sort of financial pressures that they're feeling right now. And now some people from a market puritanical standpoint say, Charlie, tough luck, you know, just cut the taxes, deregulate the economy, we'll see what happens. No, I am not okay with the birth rate going down. I'm not okay with the least married generation in American history. I think we as conservatives have to say, you know what? If we're going to stand for anything, we're going to make it easier to have children in America. We're going to make it easier to get married. And we have to entertain kind of what that looks like and how we're able to get there. But also, I find nothing wrong with saying that it's unhealthy for a country where billionaires added $600 billion to their net worth in the last year and a half, and you guys had the toughest year and a half that you've had in your lifetime. I don't think we as conservatives should pick up our pom-poms and become cheerleaders for the billionaire class. I don't. I'm not saying we should take all their money away. I'm not saying we should nationalize the industries. But I also don't think that these companies that also don't share your values, by the way, should be given a free pass, and that we should become their cheerleaders just because we're supposed to be on their team. Let's think more creatively, and let's abandon the sort of kind of party team right, team left loyalties that pre-existed us, and say, here's what we believe, here's why we believe it, whatever team you put me on, this is what we're going to support. So thanks for being here tonight. Oh, sorry, we hold the mic, bad experiences before us.
I can? Oh, at the same time? Is that weird? Oh, okay. Hey, so born and raised in Arizona, we're moving back to the Valley, so hit me up. Hey, one issue that I have with conservatives, because I've been a conservative all my life, was they tell us, hey, give us the House of Representatives. We gave it to them. Give us the Senate. We gave it to them. Lindsey Graham's one of the worst. And then we gave him the White House. And we got tax cuts, and that is it. When can they finally do something and tell Democrats, I don't care about this Russian investigation, I'm not doing it, and we're going to get our policies through?
That's a profound question, and you should come to our stuff in Arizona because you're smart.
Great question.
It was really smart, which is many of you tonight say, Charlie, I like all this, but I've been voting Republican, I've been losing the country, right? Like, we've been winning elections and we're losing the country. So there's two things that are changing and one thing we have to change. Number one, the citizenry is not putting up with it much anymore. We are demanding real action from our leaders. And you see that in a lot of the states across the country. You're seeing that in Florida, for example, where Governor Ron DeSantis, who's amazing, has signed in the anti-lockdown measures, the anti-vaccine mandates, all these sorts of different things that he has done. And so, but the second thing is that we have to realize that the extent of our relationship with government goes beyond just voting, everybody. It's staying in relationship and in contact with your elected officials. So, for example, if you're not happy with your senators, you do know they have town halls, right? You can show up and you can talk to them. One of the least utilized kind of, I think, measures by conservatives is showing up at town hall meetings and taking the time to talk to the people you send in DC. And you might say, Charlie, it doesn't make a difference. Oh, no, yes, it does. I spend private time with some senators and congressmen. It matters a lot when people, especially congressmen in their district, start to complain. Let me tell you how profound it is. If just the people on this side of the room showed up at a town hall meeting for one of your U.S. senators, that would be a shot heard around South Carolina for a year. And if every one of them complained. But usually it's just kind of like, why is my Medicare not being processed correctly? Or like the post office isn't getting enough funding. Those are the people that kind of show up to the town hall. Not like, wait a second, we put you in charge of these committees. Why are we not getting action? So I want to encourage all of you to have a more broad view of your activism, right? Not just showing up and voting and then, you know, getting away from it, but being involved 24/7, 365 and holding your leaders accountable. So here's what you do. You have to elect good guys, but just as important, sometimes even more important, is holding them accountable, because we are on the very edge. We are flirting with a dynamic where people that are conservative say, Charlie, what's the use anymore? Things don't change. We win, but we end up losing. Now, that might be true on the federal level. I will say that. But you look at the state level, the states, there has been some phenomenal traction in the last couple of years. The state of Florida and the state of South Carolina, I could tell you by being here right now, is a profoundly different culture for the better than when you go to Connecticut or Oregon. That it does matter, everybody. That it matters how you stay engaged and you stay involved, and there is hope there. That the state of South Carolina is profoundly more free than the state of Washington. That's a good kind of message of hope, why you have to stay engaged, stay involved, and also hold your leaders accountable. Thanks for being here tonight.
Hi, my name is Cole, and real quick, I just have to say, Mom and Dad, could you stand up real quick? Stand up. These two people right here, they have taught me everything about being a wonderful human. They have raised me. They've taught me how to treat women, how to be a man, be a conservative, how to do everything. And thank you so much for that. My best friend just got accepted into the Marines, and I wanted to go into the military as well. But I have a seizure condition and I wasn't able to. What is something that I could be doing to help this country?
What a great question. First of all, I want to thank everyone who served in this country and is serving. You guys are heroes and you deserve thanks and applause, truly. God has a plan for you. So now you can get involved in the fight here at home. And it's a different type of fight. But boy, if you want to make a difference, we need more people that are really dedicated and want to work hard in everything that I talked about tonight. And there's a variety of different ways you could do that. And start local, you know, start with local politics or start in kind of what's happening with our direction of our country. I could give you, you know, a whole list of ways to get engaged and get involved. But the first thing you have to do is commit. Say, I want to do this, that this is going to be something that I want to go through the rest of my life. And here's some tough love, and I tell this to audiences all the time. People say, Charlie, what's it going to take for us to retake the country? Step number one, everyone has to be the same person in public that they are in private. Right. And that goes for your faith as well. Let's just talk about this from a faith perspective. Is that no more cutting corners on your Christianity when you're around your friends, everybody. Right. No more being like, I go to church. Yeah. No, instead it's like, you know what? Nah. Like, Jesus is my Lord and Savior. He's the most important thing in my life. Like, we got to be unafraid to say that, right? That being the same person in public as you are in private is so incredibly important. And you strike me as the type of person that's willing to do that. But some people here tonight, it's like, Charlie, I'm going to get fired from my job if I do that. I might lose friends. You're right, you might. But the country starts to go in the right direction when righteous people all of a sudden start to be courageous people. That's one major change that needs to happen. And the second thing, as it kind of goes with that, is a willingness to lose things that might be comfortable today for something that might be good tomorrow. Is that sometimes you have to leave your comfort zone. You know, sometimes, like, you know, you doing this event. I'm sure you got a couple emails and texts. Why are you doing this? Blah, 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 blah. Just a little bit. Yeah. But that's courageous. It says in Joshua 1:9, be strong and courageous, right? And sometimes you have to do that because there's going to be things that are meaningful in life usually have a cost associated with them. Things that matter usually are going to cost you something. So I can give you a whole variety of things. Also get involved with Turning Point USA and Turning Point Faith. We'd love to have you engaged or involved. But don't allow not being engaged in the Marines as all of a sudden like, oh, I'm done. No, no, no. We need people involved in every single level of this fight. And God bless you for being here tonight. So thank you. One or two.
Got time. Yeah, one or two more. And then, yeah, we only got a little pushback.
A little bit?
Yeah. Which makes me want to do it more.
No, I can't. It's like non-sarcastically a little pushback.
Probably more than a little bit.
Okay.
But I love that. Okay. I love that because what I would do is I would look on their social media pages at all the stuff. And what I want to do is dive in, but I'm like, no.
Well,
and that's why I know you're doing a good job. If you've got the number of haters that you've got, then you must be making a difference because people don't hate on something that isn't making a difference. And you're obviously making a significant difference. And so, yeah, that's why you have a trash folder. So anyway, right here.
Hey, my name is Delana, and I really thank you for being here tonight because you just actually gave me a 2-minute platform. The Anderson School District board meetings are the third Tuesday of every single month. 2 months ago, I just moved back to the area. I went 2 months ago. I checked the curriculum in the middle school comprehensive health. The agenda has been taken offline. I confronted them about it. It's still not up. 2 months later, I went back last month. I'm going this month. Last month, there was the three rows right here could have filled the whole auditorium. That there was nobody there. We need the parents to come out and fight for our kids. I don't even have kids in this county, and I am fighting for your kids.
Thank you.
Please join me.
Okay. Do you have a question or no? All right.
Last question right here. We saved the best. This is the best question. Oh, this is the best. There's no pressure. This is the best question.
The last question.
That's ever going to be asked at a Charlie Kirk event right here. Here we go.
Woo, no pressure. All right. Well, first, I want to thank you, Perry. And Charlie, I want to thank you. I really appreciate all that you've done. I feel like I've seen you on Hannity a million times. And the biggest thing to me that's the most overwhelming, I think, and especially seeing what happened in the last election and see how they used COVID to, you know, take over the election laws is the media. I mean, like, how do we beat, like, I feel like it's so overwhelming to me, you know, with the, I don't believe anything about January 6th. I think it was a complete, you know, fake event. And, but I think that there's, the media is complicit with the liberal agenda. And how do we beat that? Like, how, because I'm a strong believer and I am a strong conservative. And I mean, I've been completely disengaged from politics since January 6th because I just feel like I never give up, but I'm still, I mean, I just want to get away from it because how do we win?
So first, let me just say this, which is we as Christians are commanded to reject cynicism. I cannot stand cynicism. I'm not saying you're being cynical at all. I'm not accusing you of that, but you're close. you're close. But I'm not saying you're there, but you're in the zip code. So, which is all of us. And by the way, I deal with this all the time. Like, are the odds too overwhelming? We can't get our message out. You know, they control Harvard, the New York Times, they control the FBI, the CIA. What's the point? Now, we as Christians, we have the truth and we know the truth. And we are, just as a default kind of posture, nothing we do should be cynical, everybody. We should always try to find the hope and the good in everything we are doing. Always. That's what we are commanded as Christians. And so make sure you have that kind of posture when you look at things politically as well. Now, when it goes to the media side of it, people say, Charlie, what can I do? Like, I've done everything that I've been asked to do. I watched Tucker Carlson. I bought the pillow. Like, I've done everything that I'm supposed to do.
Is there a promotion code you want to throw it?
Well, it's promo code Kirk. If you go to mypillow.com and
get that plug in.
Yeah, the Giza Dream Sheets are unbelievable. The slippers are heavenly. And if you want the best night's sleep that you'll ever get, made in America guarantee, mypillow.com, promo code Kirk, okay?
Your softball.
Right there. No, but And this is part of it, which is that we have to become our own media. So you want to know what gives me hope? Is that with full media suppression and social media suppression, 65% of Americans are familiar with the chant, "Let's go, Brandon." Now, that might be a small thing. You're like, oh, what difference does that make? No, that's with the full suppression, that we are still able to get the message out to 65%. Now it's way more than that because the media finally has to cover it, right? The same goes with the CRT thing. No one in the media covered CRT. It was a full blackout blanket suppression campaign. But it started to travel through people texting stories to people, people talking to people, and that's all of a sudden rejecting the cynical posture to the active optimistic posture. We're going to solve problems. We're going to get the message out, get the word out. I agree with you. The media is a huge problem. Again, we do our two podcasts a day. You know, if you guys want to get media straight from the source, that's fine. But I do think that things are starting to change. Rumble.com, R-U-M-B-L-E.com is a great YouTube competitor. Everyone should use Rumble as your go-to video and streaming platform. Things are starting to go in the right direction in a very significant and real way. But look, the media is going to do what they do, but their ratings are collapsing like you wouldn't believe. And I think that all of a sudden they're going to have 10 to 15% of the population that watches them. But I think that a majority of Americans are going to start to wake up to this stuff, wake up to decency and wake up to pro-American ideas and values. So thanks for being here tonight. So. Everybody, this has been so awesome. I want to reiterate, the most important thing you can do in your life is give your life to Jesus Christ. If you're here tonight and you have not done that, you got to get that done and understand the significance of what that means and being reborn. My life's work is in the second most important thing. I still talk about number one, but I just want to encourage all of you to do more. Is that this nation, I believe, is a gift. It is the most free, generous, successful, wealthy nation in the history of the world. And I believe that it would be a disservice to what we have been given and for generations prior for us just to sit idly by and say, no, I'm not going to do that. We have to be engaged. We have to be involved. We have to be aware of what's going on. And that's the other thing, which is I know it's tempting just to kind of watch the endless Netflix series or Hulu series, but you got to carve time to do two things every single day. Number one, be aware of what's going on in the news. And number two, learn something new every single day about your nation. We have partnered with Hillsdale College. If you guys want to take the online courses, it's charliefor.hillsdale.com, because everyone here says, Charlie, I want to do more to save the country. Be aware and learn. Those are two things that are super important, because how are you ever going to know what to do if you don't know what you have and you don't know what's happening? If you're like, I know what I would do. Okay, what's going on in the news cycle? And then what does it mean? What are your rights as a citizen? What does the Constitution say? How many articles of the Constitution are there? What is the preamble? What is the beginning of the Declaration saying? What does it mean for you? These things are so incredibly important, everybody, because we are in the truth business and we know the truth sets people free. And guess what, everybody? In the end, we are going to win. In the end, victory is ours because it's the Lord's. God bless you guys. Thank you so much for having us here tonight.
Thank y'all for coming.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.